Mini episode 1819 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1819. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here today with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Ben Chu. Normally, Ben is on to talk basketball with us in his role as the FDH Hoops analyst, but sometimes we also do some TV projects, as very recently, looking at the Succession Season 2 finale. And looking at season two as a whole. Brighton slip. Yes. Severance. That's right. That's right. I get the greats confused sometimes in my mind. You're right about that. Yes, it was Severance season two. Severance. So mini episode 1818, actually. And so here in 1819, this was all Ben's idea. Ben hipped me to this whole idea here. I was actually even unaware of this scandal. I was a kid back in the day, but hadn't really heard about it. Pre-internet, things weren't basically ubiquitous. I mean, if something like this happens today, I mean, everybody would have known about it by lunchtime. But back in the day, somehow for me, it got under the radar. For you, Ben, I'm guessing it was probably in 2003 when this documentary aired on the Game Show Network, the one that you sent me on YouTube. But we're talking today about the Press Your Luck movie that's coming out, and it is The Luckiest Man in America, and it is going to be set for theater release, and it is going to be theater release, I believe, on April 4th. I think that's the date that it is coming out, so we're going to talk about this.
It premiered apparently at South by Southwest, or was it Sundance?
Yes, one of those ones, yeah. I think it was Sundance.
It was at the Toronto International.
Oh, that one. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's already out there. Some folks have seen it, but as far as the wide theatrical release, and me thinks they're probably going to have a streaming deal lined up for not too long after that. But yeah, I was completely unfamiliar with this whole thing. I watched the trailer when you sent it to me, and I was very much intrigued. Subsequently, you sent me the documentary that aired on the Game Show Network in 2003. So I'm able to discuss this, I think, from all the different angles. But why don't you just kind of set it up here? Because this is something that you've been fascinated with for a long time.
Sure. And like, we've seen a lot of game show scandals, Rick. Obviously, the most notable one, I think, in most of America, we talked about, was the quiz show one, the Thomas Van Doren movie quiz show.
Yep.
And then obviously one of the more recent ones, the whole Major Charles Ingram thing that starred, you know, from Succession, Peter McFadden, as the millionaire contestant over in Brent, who had allegedly cheated to get $1 million.
And okay.
Those are the two most notable ones. This is one that's kind of flown under the radar. There was supposed to be, just some background on this too, there was supposed to be a movie made allegedly in 2004. That was greenlit. I had Bill Murray cast in the main role, but that just never came to fruition. And then
and
I thought
Nicolas Cage producing it too. Yeah,
Nicolas Cage producing it. I initially thought this was dead. It was never going to be made after, you know, all this time. But then now we run into a scenario where, you know, you have Paul, one of the, you know, better, I would argue, character actors in today's world, Paul Hauser, essentially. And, you know, Walton Goggins is also in it too. We're going to see Macy Williams of Game of Thrones fame also in it. And you're going to see it's a very interesting story. So just to get to rewind this all back, in 1983, like currently everyone knows Press Your Luck, the show on ABC now hosted by Elizabeth Banks. Obviously, that was a reboot of the prior version in 1983 that was hosted by Peter Tamarkin. And at the time, it was, we remember too, Rick, it was the 1980s. Game shows were everywhere on TV.
Sure. Predominantly daytime, but yes.
It was one of the more notable ones that came in. Like, it was in the time of like Card Sharks, $25,000 Pyramid, And Press Your Luck is one of the weirder shows in the fact that most of these other ones, it was more about your knowledge and what you knew. But this is more just of a game, almost a casino-esque sort of show with a big board that allowed you to put to spin every once in a while. So essentially the game overall was there were two rounds. The first round would be, you know, you'd have a question and answer round. You would then, contestants would guess, get spins, and then they'd be able to use them on the board, and you get to, you know, spin during the main game. So obviously the first board had a lot less money on it, and the second board had a lot of money on it. So ultimately, it was kind of the very first TV show, I thought, that really sort of mimicked that sort of casino aspect on TV. Because in most cases, like, let's be honest, you weren't winning a lot of money on game shows in the early 1980s. Like, the max I think you could win at any period of time was like $28,000. Maybe if you got lucky on $25,000 pyramid and won both games, you could get up $35,000. But the major story here is that we had an unemployed ice cream truck driver from Ohio found a way to win over $100,000 on a single day of work on Press Your Luck. And the story is just really astounding about how he was able to figure out the patterns of the game board and how he kind of had the stones to just keep on going and win this insane amount of money, which was a record, honestly, up to 2004. When he was still the single highest winner of a game show in one episode. That obviously changed when The Price is Right did their $1 million show. Obviously that changed, but it's still to this day, I think, one of the more interesting stories. And I'm really interested to see how Paul Walker Hauser, how they kind of give life to this sort of forgotten contestant in Michael Larson for this, not forgotten contestant, but sort of forgotten game show scandal.
Yeah, and now it adds a little bit more, for me personally, a little bit more context to, in some of the scratch bowling leagues that I've been in previously, the notion of some of the guys trying to whammy other guys. I never quite really knew where that term came from. I mean, I could discern, generally speaking. Didn't know it specifically came from here, but you're trying to avoid the whammy on the board. And that's what subsequently happened on this day. Michael Larson, who again, Paul Walter Hauser plays him in the movie. The other biggest role in the movie is and I've said before, I think the greatest actor of his generation and one of the greatest actors alive, Walton Goggins, as he plays Peter Tamarkin in the role as the game show host. This was recorded May 19th, 1984. I think sometime a couple weeks later in June is when it aired. It aired as a two-parter, which was very unusual because most of these shows would just be for one day, but they had so much they couldn't fit it into one episode of 22 minutes or whatever it is after commercials. So you go through this here. Some of the other notable actors in the movie as well, Lily Kay and Johnny Knoxville and some of the other support roles here, and a really good cast for the movie. So it's very promising in that way. But you mentioned as far as the Vegas aspect of this thing. And this is where, again, we don't ever really get too much into this before we get on the air. We like to kind of, you know, be spontaneous on this. So you didn't know that this was my thought pattern here, but I'm going to bring this up. So what would you liken this to out of Las Vegas in terms of something that what the guy did was, it wasn't illegal. You could even argue it wasn't necessarily unethical. It took a lot of skill to be able to do what he did. He wasn't cheating. What would that be similar to in Las Vegas? A thing that's not illegal, a thing that is a matter of skill, but in the case of Las Vegas, the casinos make it so you can't do it.
I know where you're going with this. I'm going to assume card counting is the big.
Yes, yes. The guy was basically a card counter. Yeah, I mean, that's the analogy I got right there. Yeah.
And I mean, I wanted to also note this here. Like, Press Your Luck was one of the very first shows that you saw contestants win big money consistently in cash and prizes. Like, there were, before the Michael Larson episode aired, you'd routinely see someone walk home with like $20,000 or $15,000, which back then, as you can understand, was still a fair amount of money, but it's still absolutely shocking that we had a situation like this where a man won $110,000. Now it's over $300,000 if we include inflation. But it was a very distinctive show. It's a very 80s show.
Yes.
Where it was more about skill, and it was more about skill more than anything. And this was not a game show where you had to know everything. Like, you just needed to learn, have enough basic general knowledge to win spins and go on the big board. And it's, I always like to liken this to very similar to, like, I would say, like, the closest analogy I can make is like Ichiro's hitting streak,
mm-hmm.
where just being such a technician and understanding it, because apparently the reason why that Michael Larson was able to figure this out was that he recorded episodes and just rewound and fast forward to figure out the patterns. And the big thing is that he also figured out very quickly that of the game board itself, two of the squares never had a whammy on them. And figured out that those were the squares you wanted to hit, and you would continue to keep playing the game because you had an unlimited amount of spins. If you kept having a spin, the game did not end until everyone ran out of spins. So
right.
I always tell people it's fascinating. I'm not sure the movie will live up to just watching the regular episode uninterrupted. But it is really just to build the whole drama of this aspect of just seeing someone go for that amount of money on the show. It wasn't rare to see big money go off on that show, but to see someone continuously keep going and win $110,000 was insane. Yeah. And no one, you could tell just in the episode itself that Peter Tamarkin, played by Walton Goggins in the movie, was basically pleading with him to stop. Because he was afraid that he was going to lose all that money at some point. And he almost did, if you look at some of the later spins in the game. And just, it's a lot. And again, but you have to give him credit. He was one of the most interesting contestants that's ever been on that show. And again, this is also before, too, Rick, this is before the cult of game shows really came into effect. Like, now we see this more often with, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. And you get to know, it's like, but this was like the first real show, in my opinion, that made contestants not necessarily famous, but it put the contestants more forward than the host did.
Yes. And I will say, you know, in watching this, that again, I liken this to card counting in the sense that, again, he had like five predetermined patterns. So, yeah, he would sit there with his VCR and rewind it. So, I mean, VCR, the epitome of 80s technology. Like, today you could go frame by frame on this. If a guy with 1980s technology can beat your system, then your system sucks. You deserve to lose all this money to him. And subsequently, I mean, not long thereafter, they're like, hey, maybe we should make it harder. And they've done it now to where it's impossible to beat the system in the same way. It's just too randomized as far as what the patterns are. And again, the laziness went away the minute that they got exploited in that way. When you talk about that, you're not sure that the movie's going to live up to the documentary. I mean, I'm looking at it like, again, we're going to be seeing some great performances here. But in terms of the story that they tell, is it going to be as good as the story from the documentary from the Game Show Network in 2003? Where I'm wondering if that'll be the case is that I don't think this movie is going to allow, just as just a prediction, I don't think it's going to allow enough space for a character study, because to me, the character study is more important than anything else that happens. You have the moments of drama, but it's all fueled by the kind of character that this is. And you and I talked about this off air. So I have a very good friend, and it occurs to me that maybe a number of people do too. This is an archetype that's out there. I'm not going to mention my friend's name, but we all have, a lot of us have a friend who is maybe the smartest person that we know, you know, at least in terms of raw brilliance, somebody who's so very good at working angles. And, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, it will kind of bite them in the butt sometimes. So that's where, again, it adds the drama. And as you're watching this, like, is this going to be the moment where the hubris catches up to them? Because this type of archetype that so many of us know, the hubris sometimes does catch up to them. It just didn't catch up to Michael Larson on this day in that studio. And it's a thing, too, where I can identify this pattern, because I will say the friend that I have is somebody who was an acquaintance of my late friend, Dave Adams, that I was very close with. And Dave kind of looked at this guy a little bit like, okay, whatever. But the funny thing is, he had a friend that was the same way. And I kind of look at that guy like, okay, whatever. And I remember I said to him at one point, I'm like, you do know this guy is your equivalent of my friend such and such, right? And Dave kind of shook his head like, yeah, I guess so. So it's like a lot of us have a friend that's like this. And that's what makes it so fascinating to watch this. If you have a friend that's one of these guys, you're going to be glued to this movie, right? No matter
and
what.
My big thing too about just his entire story is interesting. Like, he, you know, he grew up the son of someone who was constantly working, is always trying to do little get rich quick schemes and all that too. And this was part of it. And I mean, you got to give your hats off to someone who he told a very convincing story to get on the episode too. Like, he has said, he was unemployed, drove an ice cream truck, you know, was, you know, had to buy a shirt for 90 cents just to get on the show in a suit. And he portrayed himself, at least initially, as the likable contestant, you know, the sort of, you know, not necessarily dumb, but more just like, he came off as like someone who's very enthusiastic, was excited to be there. And he just worked this entire angle of learning the patterns and just continuously spinning. And you can just, the biggest part, I think, of the episode to me is once he gets up to around about $60,000 or $70,000, and you can just see on his face that he's excited to keep going, but he's also starting to lose his edge just a little bit. Yep. Just with the amount of time if I remember correctly, he spanned the board 45 consecutive times without hitting a whammy up to that point. And it's just, you can tell like parts when he's getting near the end where you can tell like he's just like running out of mental gas, because he has to put this amount of effort to watch the game board and focus on the patterns. Because one slip of the button, Rick, he loses all that money. He can gain it back, obviously.
Yep.
But there, you just don't know at that point. And you also, it was the one thing that made Press Your Luck at that timeline a very unique show is that it put the contestants forward, but you could really start to see how people's emotions played with each other. It's a game against the big board that has all the money and cash and the whammies on it, but you're also playing against the minds of other people. And like, you start to see very early on in some of the earlier episodes of the 80s is about who is someone who wants to take risks and who is someone who would prefer to have other people take the risks for them. And it's going to be interesting how they play him in the movie, but it seemed like he was very affable guy, very smart, but also at the same time too, we also had this sort of darker side that wasn't exactly, you know, he had the dark side. He just liked making money, and he has this sort of now legacy status now,
right,
with the show. And like, and the thing too about the show itself is that the contestants, there were a lot of notable characters that came through that door. The talk show host Jenny Jones was on it she had a 3-game winning streak. Gemini from the Michael Horton, from American Gladiators was on the show. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you had NFL guys on the show too. So that you had the opportunity to not necessarily become a star for Press Your Luck, but you had the opportunity to make a lot of money, but get yourself out to America in a way like that. And this is sort of a scandal that got put under the radar mainly because CBS kind of pushed it out of the way. The dual episodes were only aired once during the original run of the show, and it wasn't until I believe it was 08 that the entire unaired episode was aired on the Game Show Network even.
Yeah.
So it had been at least 25 years since anyone had seen the full show in its entirety.
Well, and this really is an exception to the rule in life here. This is a case where, and I'm not going to fight you using the word scandal because that's what everybody refers to it as, but this is a case where history is written by the losers. Because if we're going to call this a scandal, like I said, he outsmarted people that were ripe to be outsmarted. They had a system that was there. There's nothing unethical about what he did with using, again, primitive 80s VCR technology to be able to outsmart this thing. Now, as they were showing in the 2003 documentary, which was not with primitive 80s technology, as they're going frame by frame, you could sometimes see him celebrating even a split second before it landed on what it was going to land on, because all he knew was it wasn't going to be a whammy. He knew that. And it's funny, too, from the documentary, and we'll see how much of this seeps through in the movie, if they kind of play up this aspect, because you had the two other contestants on the show here. You had the one guy, I think, that was a pastor who had been the defending champion. Yes. And then the woman that was on there, and she said, well, I came on thinking I was going to be the big winner today. And just with like some of her comments she made in the documentary, I'm looking at this like, man, talk about somebody that's got main character syndrome. Like, she just seems so seemingly resentful that we're not here talking about her big score on that day. And I thought that was funny.
And the thing, too, is like, I think, and at least for Janie Leitrus, who was the other contestant on the episode, she did pretty much everything of what you would have done on the normal episode. Like, she had the highest amount of spins in round one, got the most money in round one, and then pretty much expected, like, she had also a high amount of spins in the final round, in the second round or the final round.
Right.
That she probably would have won the game. But that's what made the show so interesting, is that you could literally, there could be a scenario, you could be down $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 to an opponent and make it back. Or win, right, essentially, by passing a spin and hoping they whammied out. So
right,
that's what built the tension and the drama. And I like I said, too, like, there was, at one point, too, there was a computer version of this game, and they put the Michael Larson board on, and I tried to beat the record overall, and I did, but it was, once you got up to that, it's the biggest thing is when you got up to that 70, 80,000 limit, it's like your brain sort of, even though you know this is not, at least for the game that I played, you know this is not real money.
Right.
But all the pressure and all the energy you have to expound about focusing in on and doing the thing. And like, I know too, like, one of the producers of the show even notes it in the documentary, like, it looked like he had the, like, Michael Larson, when he's looking at the game board, he's watching it very similar, like a kid playing video games. So he's just hyper focused.
Yeah.
And it's just an incredible story too, because there's also too rumors post episode that there were other contestants who had also figured out the pattern. So there's a distinct scenario. It wouldn't have been him.
Right.
But also you have to consider, if you're the producers of the show at the time for CBS, is that someone maybe who was a little more mentally adept or almost mentally more focused and more zen-like almost.
Yeah.
He could have reeled off 200, 300, 400,000. Just to note, too, it's like the game does not end until they decide to end it. So
right,
if Michael Larson wanted to keep spinning, he could have kept spinning for all of time if he wanted to.
Right. Yeah. And he pushed it again further than anybody thought he would have. And this Jamie Leitrus, the other contestant on there, it's one of those things where, again, and whatever the average amount of money was that you won at that time, whether it would have been $10,000, $25,000, whatever, I mean, sure, that would have been great for her. But I think the point that she was missing in 2003 is, what would have happened for her if she won that would have mattered in her life as much as being there in this famous moment? You know, you're not getting called back to the game show network in 2003 if you're the winner for like two freaking days on a game show, right? You're there because you were an eyewitness to history. You were there. So it's like, it's easy for me to say that in 1984 money, which would have, that 10 or 25,000 would have gone a lot further, whatever she would have won. But it's a thing where, you know, come on, what would you have gotten out of that? That basically adds up to, you were the person next to, and you were part of the story of one of the greatest game shows, you know, tales of all time.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing too, is like, the one good thing I feel like this will bring people in is that this is one of the most interesting stories by one of the most interesting contestants in game show history, about someone who beat the odds to win this bundle of cash and became very, you know, it had its own level of fame. I don't know if it was the highest rated game show at the time, but it was up there. It was part of CBS's big network push for over 5 years. And to have a scenario where someone in a single day wins over $100,000 and creates this whole thing and causes the game to be changed forever, it's a very interesting story, and it's going to be a very interesting movie just to sort of see how they play his character angle, but also to kind of build up the 80s-ness of how crazy this moment was, because it did happen every day on that show. It would, you still won sizable amounts of money, but You're making $100,000 in the 1980s. Like, I'll make an analogy. I prior to the recording of this episode, I looked up 1985 NBA player salaries.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Larson single day winnings was higher than like 37 players in the NBA at the time.
Wow. Okay.
They were routinely making $70,000, $80,000.
Yeah. That's so incredible.
bad that it's just one single day on a game show. And again, it's going to be, it's one of those shows that is kind of in the archives of game show history. It's always, it's going to be the one that sort of, in my opinion, sort of sparked America's interest in sort of the game, big, essentially the big bucks phenomena of the 1980s. And the big thing there too, of like, we've seen it now where you can now go on a game show and make life-changing money and make a career for it. We've seen it. This is like, in my opinion, Press Your Luck as a game show in terms of the history of game shows. This was the real first boom or bust show that put the contestants' personality forward more than anything else. And what we've now seen in a lot of these shows, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you know, $125,000 peer, you know, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Jeopardy, and Wheel of Fortune, where you have these notable contestants who win a lot of money, who become part of the lexicon of our society.
Right.
And this was just, this was like the infancy of the of game show contestants becoming favorites, essentially.
That's true. And part of it is, and you talked about this before, as far as the ability to stay under cool under pressure with this, and somebody else might have been able to go further with it, although then that's the whole dichotomy of it. The kind of person that could stay cool enough under pressure to go further with it probably wouldn't have had the kind of brain to figure it out in the first place. But because this archetype, which I know well, it's a thing where there's a little bit that's just under the surface of like, they're smarter than you and they know it. And they're not always going to be overt about it, but they will let you know it. And that's what was seeping through when I watched the documentary. I'm sure Paul Walker Hauser is going to be chewing the scenery with this one here. Those moments with the S-eating grin here of like, I'm beating the system and there ain't nothing you can do about it. I mean, that's inherent to the type of archetype that can beat the system and do something like this, is that they're going to kind of peacock about it a bit, more than a bit, really.
And you can see later on in the episode, once he gets up to 60s, 70s, as he's turning to the crowd, he's cheering, you're hearing like you're seeing like the reactions of like Jamie being absolutely frustrated and screaming, and then Ed's just there already, one of my just in absolute shock that he's still going. Because again, at the time, you know, you would routinely win like 15, 20K on that show. It was no big deal. But when you're getting to 170, 80, $90,000, everyone, I think, was shocked. It's still one of, in my opinion, one of the most fun TV episodes of all time to just watch in real time, because it's just, it has everything. It has the drama, it has the pressure, and you have like the fear of, if he screws up just once, he's going to lose all that money.
Yep.
And I don't think a lot of game shows outside, I would say Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is the only other one I could think of that built that drama inherently into the show.
Yeah.
And it just, it may, and again, too, the show existed well onwards later on. Like, this was in, I believe I'm correct, season two of the show. Like, it still had 5, 7, 6 years, and it had a long shelf life on the USA Network and then the Game Show Network and now Buzzer today. So it's just one of the, it's really interesting that the movie is finally going to get made. It's going to be really interesting how he's casted, essentially, and how, you know, we kind of jet back to the 1980s in real time and just see how the character is, because it's a very memorable show and it's a very interesting scenario, because in most game shows you don't really see, unless like you would say a show like Jeopardy, where you just have an incredibly smart person like Ken Jennings or Brad Holzhauer, that you, or excuse me, James Holzhauer, who just knows so much and understands so much that their runs are different. But this is just the first time, and again, it goes back to the whole casino aspect that we discussed earlier in this episode, of just going for it and continuously being focused on trying to win. And that's what just makes the story crazy. And again, there's always the postscript of this too, that Michael Larson, you know, did not become that famous from this entire scenario. He got his money, he lost a percentage of it in a real estate scam, and then lost the other bit of money after it was stolen from his house when he was trying to do another scam. So
yeah,
it's kind of a scammer's, it's sort of an intelligent scammer story, man. We talk about this now all the time, especially with like sports betting and, you know, all these sort of scenarios where you have these people who think they're smarter than everybody else and want to prove it. Like, we're seeing all this stuff now, Rick, in the of the TikTok generation of people showing off their winnings and showing off how much money they could win in a single day. I mean, this all dates back to Michael Arson on this day, that he was the person to break the system and win $110,000. Allegedly, he even says on the episode later on that he only wanted to win 20 to start so he could win even more on the next day. But, you know, it's just, he's a very interesting human being. And I feel like now that this is going to push him back out there. Because I felt like, too, it's like, this scandal, this was more of a CBS scandal, and it was pushed away in the moment.
Yep.
But now it's going to come out again. And I think, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how just America receives this movie and just how the world receives this movie, because it's an incredible story. And it's going to be a very interesting sort of little flashback, because everything old is new again. And now we have this generation of Press Your Luck with a bonus prize board where you can win up to $1 million. So it's just part of the whole thing. And it's, the story has so many twists and turns, and it's going to be really interesting how Paul Walker Hauser plays it, how Walt Goggins plays Peter Tomarkin, and how all these other character actors are going to essentially try and build 1980 CBS up again.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that, to see how they're going to try that. It's going to be thrilling to watch them make that effort. And again, I think it's just a thing where the effort from the early 2000s that fell apart. I mean, maybe there wasn't enough space in there. I mean, it's a point now where now it really is everything that's old is new again. I mean, again, I was a kid at the time. I didn't even, you know, pick up that this was happening. What about all the people that have been born since then, haven't heard about this? It's far enough in the rear view.
Yeah, it's
for people too. But with the revival of the show, I think, helped too. That becomes a thing of like, oh, you want to hear the legend from what happened the first time this was on the air? So there's a lot of factors that sort of made this the right place and the right time to be able to go forward. And, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing this, debuting in theaters April 4th.
Yeah, it's going to be an absolute – it's either going to be a fun train wreck, or it's going to be one of the most interesting movies of the spring-summer timeline.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's going to be really, really fun to watch. That's it for the notes I have. Anything else that you got that we didn't cover yet?
I don't really, not really. I think one of the big things, too, is that we talk about, especially in today's society, about all the get-rich-quick scheme. Like, this was the original get-rich-quick scheme of all time.
So yeah.
Going on a game show, memorizing it, winning $110,000. And again, to this day, the show still exists. I'm happy that it's back. It's still one of the most exciting game shows to watch on television these days. So, but it's good to see this story get brought up again, because that had been a long time since this was really in the forefront of the pop culture society.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm really glad you hip me to it, and that I was able to watch the documentary, and we could do this segment here together, previewing and anticipating this movie, because yeah, I think it is going to be amazing to be able to watch. Coming to theaters April 4th, I think it's going to be in pretty wide release. The Luckiest Man in America, it is, of course, the Press Your Luck movie, the story of how Michael Larson was able to beat them out of, I think, $110,000 in 1984 dollars, which would go, again, as you said, probably about three times further today.
330 at least.
Yeah, yeah. And so truly, truly remarkable. And again, really glad that you, like I said, that you hit me to this, and that you were here for this one today, Ben Chu. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1819.